Good evening and welcome to another edition of Reporters Roundtable. We are coming to you live from VOA studios here in Washington. I'm Douglas Impuga, and this evening we'll talk about foreign aid and corruption in Africa. And with us tonight is David Himbara. Dr. Himbara is an educator, political economist, and author. He is also a former economic advisor to Rwandan President Paul Kagame. He joins us by phone from Toronto, Canada. Welcome to the show, David.
Thank you so much. My pleasure to be here.
You're very much welcome. Also joining us is a regular panelist, Suleiman Mugula. He joins us from Durban, South Africa. He's an independent political analyst. Suleiman, welcome to the show once again.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
You're very much welcome. Gentlemen, as I said, our topic tonight is foreign aid and corruption in Africa. For the sake of our listeners, simply put, foreign aid is the act done by a country or international organization to help other countries in terms of supplying goods, services, and monetary aid. It can be in the form of military aid, assistance, or it can be in any other form, food and training. It can also be given as a form of a loan. But looking at Africa particularly, the continent as a whole has received tens of billions of dollars of international assistance every year. Yet, instead of drastically improving the living conditions of the 600 million people who live below the poverty line, this aid makes the rich richer, the poor poorer, and hinders economic growth in the region, according to some, not to mention catalyzing the vicious circle of corruption. Let me start in Toronto here, which is nearest to me, David. First of all, before we go into the nitty-gritty, your general view of foreign aid to Africa and how it may, some people say, it helps corruption thrive.
Yeah, well, look, we're talking a bit about a lot of money. I think Africa, the last time I looked was that Africa gets an average of $30 billion in foreign aid every year. So that is a lot of money. And as you said, if 30 billion was an investment, a real investment, that would really have impact. But it never seems to have impact. It comes and goes. The show goes on.
Mm-hmm. Suleiman?
Yeah, I agree with my brother that surely the aid which has been given to Africa, I think... To add on what you have said, some figures look at almost $1 trillion since independence. But when you look at the impact, it is barely minimal. There is barely nothing. You can see a lot of poverty still increasing, a lot of hopelessness in many populations in sub-Saharan Africa. So it is very, very clear that the aid itself has not helped the population on the continent. Instead, as you have said in your intro, those who are in charge, they seem to be richer and richer. And because they are using free money, which they have not worked for, many of them have decided not even to relinquish power but to stay there forever, because they are becoming richer and richer and there is no need to account because it's just free money.
I see. Well, the examples are many across the continent to those countries that receive a lot of foreign aid that actually doesn't trickle down to the person, the poor people it's meant to assist. Let me start with David here in Toronto. I just read your open letter to the executive of the Arsenal Football Club, the English Football Club, which signed a deal with the government of Rwanda, a three-year $40 million deal, sponsorship deal. First of all, your comment on this deal and how this kind of expenditure sort of makes our point that maybe foreign aid, if you can throw away $40 million in to sponsor a club, then maybe you don't need foreign aid.
Yeah, really. I think this one is the most absurd. I think this is probably the ugliest that we have ever seen. Basically, what has happened is that Rwanda has signed a $40 million deal for 3 years. for Arsenal. Arsenal is going to wear a logo on the shirt, on their shirt, that reads "Visit Rwanda." So here is a country that is paying $40 million for a logo on a shirt, and yet it receives annually about $1 billion in foreign aid. How does a country that receives $1 billion in foreign aid afford to pay $40 million to a club? It just does not make any sense. And of course, there is a history to this. The president of Rwanda apparently is a regular fan of this football club.
Yeah.
He's a regular visitor there to watch games. He has a private box. So all this is in the open. That's really the arrogance of it.
Mm-hmm.
It just does not make any sense. If you don't need aid, if you can afford to pay $40 million of that kind, then why do you receive aid? Why does that go on, really?
Mm-hmm.
Just incredible.
Yeah, Suleiman, Rwanda is not an odd man out in this among poor countries on the continent that keep moving around with a hat in hand, begging for foreign aid, but spend the money lavishly. Neighboring Uganda, the president got foreign aid money and bought himself a presidential jet.
Yeah. Not only presidential jet, even in form of advertisement, even other institutions, like sometime back in Uganda, they had their adverts on CNN, which are meant to promote the tourism, as you are saying, but with millions of dollars spent recklessly like that. It all leads to one thing that I think what we have failed to understand as a continent, that this foreign aid will not, and it has never, pulled a country out of its economic problem. It will not be aid which will help countries to achieve their economic success. We have seen from many other countries that those countries which have gained a good economic success, countries like China, countries like India, countries like South Africa, they have not used this foreign aid. A country has to generate its own funds to be able to grow economically, not the aid. Otherwise, it is not even the first time. What is the biggest problem, Douglas, is the double standard? Because Rwanda is not the first to show recklessness in using aid. It is a fact now. It has been going on for years. Actually, in 2005, even the IMF itself warned during the G8 meeting. It warned the donor countries that it wrote a report on the impact of aid, and it warned the donor countries that aid was not going to lead to lift African countries from their economic woes. So it was trying to warn the donor countries that giving money anyhow to these countries won't help them. So the bottom line is, aid on itself will not help Africans unless there is a good way of using this aid. But currently, given the 60 years we have been receiving aid, and without proper impact, given that over 50% of the 360 million Africans on the continent are still living under less than a dollar, then it shows that aid has not had impact. It means there are other issues other than aid which have to be tackled instead of pinning our hopes on this aid.
I see. David, maybe Mr. Hagame could be a genius by signing this sponsorship deal with the English club Arsenal. Maybe he could expect high dividends. What do you think?
Well, you see, if this cleverness, as my colleague was just saying from Durban there, if this cleverness or innovative thinking was applied to solving real problems. Look, for example, the same Rwanda that is spending $40 million on a club is a country that has only 216 megawatts of electricity. That kind of electricity cannot even power a small neighborhood in these countries where we live. So basically, as my colleague was saying, basically what the problem is that it's leadership across the continent, and the leadership that has wrong priorities. The case that he mentioned of success, there is no magic. You build power the country. You build roads, infrastructure.
Yeah.
You put money into human resources, develop people. And then if you want to engage with the external world, engage it with foreign investment. Have good infrastructure and then bring foreign investment, challenge domestic investment, and then you build economy. But this approach of having foreign aid that then frees your own resources to go into ventures like buying a Gulfstream jet, hiring football teams out there. It's basically somebody once described foreign aid as money that is taken from poor people in developed world, and then which are the taxpayers, and then given to the rich of the developing world, the leaders. So it's a loss. The taxpayers whose governments take their money to give foreign aid lose out. And then the people in whose name this aid is taken, the population, does not benefit at all.
I see.
It is insane.
Yes, Suleiman, Father, the irony is so glaring. Take, for instance, countries where they get a lot of foreign aid for health and education and all that. Then when their cronies or relatives fall sick, they fly them out to the countries that gave them foreign aid in the first place to have medical treatment there at a cost or expense that could have maybe built a whole health center.
Exactly. That is the irony, Douglas. Actually, at the moment, the ordinary man on the continent does not even understand why these countries should get aid. For what? As you are saying, a country like Uganda has been receiving a lot of money in aid, but when you reach the country, the hospitals have collapsed. There is no medicine. The country received, first of all, it is not only the financial aid which is flowing in year after year. There was a time in the 90s when there was also HIPIC, which the hype of it was that once they are relieved of those debts which they were forgiven, then they'll be able to generate their own money and stand on their own. To date, you go, you find hospitals, they have got no medicine. Worse still, a few days ago, I was listening to BBC, and there was a program about Uganda, which whereby one NGO is training the local population how to make sanitary pads locally. A population which in the 1970 was richer per capita, now it has gone down and down despite the aid. This is a country which used to export coffee, which used to export cotton, which used to produce groundnuts, simsim, and so others, but now it has gone down. In other words, as we are saying, we don't even know why this aid should continue coming. I mean, aid is like an investment. You cannot give an investment to someone, to an institution, without a business plan. You have to look at the business plan. How can you give a fund to a company which is insolvent? most of these African countries, the governments, they are insolvent. Then you pump money there. For what? The leaders. The only way aid would help would be when we have got, as my brother said, transparent government, accountable government, efficient civil service, well-motivated citizenry, and then focused policies. That is where the donor country should give aid. But if you are giving a dictator who has spent 20, 30 years, who is the king of himself, that is why they spend them like that. That is why Kagame can donate it to Arsenal. That is why Museveni can go and buy himself jets. That is why he can buy helicopters for war, whereas it's a landlocked country. So these are the problems which we have. So in the long run, the African continent has not benefited from this aid.
I see. Well, for those just joining us, you're listening to Reporters Roundtable, and we're coming to you live from VOA Studios here in Washington. Tonight, we're discussing foreign aid and corruption in Africa. Our panelists are David Himbara, an educator, political economist, and author, and Suleiman Mugula, an independent political analyst, and I'm your host, Douglas Impuga, here in Studio One in Washington. Now, David, We've gone through the corruption and how aid is being misused or wasted on the continent. In your opinion, what role do the donors play? Because the donors do know what's going on.
Yeah. Well, you see, the donors are part of the problem. You see, what tends to happen is that. Let me put it this way. There are obviously some good-intentioned people that want to help Africa. They see those images on the TV screen, children without food, in poor health, refugee crisis, and so on. So I'm not an extremist in my views about donors. So donors come in all types, and so I give them the benefit of the doubt that some of them are indeed and they should be moved by empathy. Now, where the problem comes in is that some of the leaders in the developed world. They commit. Basically, they form some kind of friendship with the regimes where they, or with the government or with the leaders where they are putting this aid. And over time, the relationship changes from government to government into person to person or party to party. Then the donors. So when they put too much money into this friendship, then it becomes rather difficult to kind of withdraw. The good example is Tony Blair in the UK and Kagame. So aid was indeed originally well intentioned to build institutions in a country that had been devastated by war and genocide. But that was okay. But slowly, the whole thing became now Blair and Kagame, so that even when Blair left the government, then he becomes an advisor to Kagame. He becomes a lobbyist. So now then this aid now becomes like a personal thing. It becomes a major problem. Then it becomes the opposite of what aid should be.
Mm-hmm.
Aid should be government to government, held accountable on both sides, time framed to achieve goal A, goal B. But it's not romance between two people who now basically perpetuate themselves into this game of aid that serves no one.
I see.
Really.
But you see, Suleiman, what's intriguing, what some people have pointed out to me, What explains the attraction of dictators on the continent to foreign aid? Because if you look from Egypt, Ethiopia, Uganda, Rwanda, it seems as if you're a dictator, then you attract more aid. Botswana doesn't get a lot of foreign aid. South Africa does not get foreign aid, a lot of it. Why should the donors look for dictators to hand over their money?
That is why we are saying that it seems primarily the aid, what we have seen now, what we have discovered is that primarily the aim of aid, as it is not for the interest of the recipient, but for the interest of the donor countries. Because really, you can't see why the money should be given to these dictators. As you are saying, once a country is ruled by dictators, there are no systems. For example, when you talk of countries, let's say like Uganda, let's take Uganda, you have got a country which has got a bloated bureaucracy, a country which is excessively spending on the military, a country bedeviled by corruption, whereby within that bloated system, the major controllers of government are the husband, who is the president, the wife, who is the minister of education, and the education is the minister of education. Why? Because it is the third recipient in the national budget. And then the son. So when you look at all these countries where they are pushing money, these are for dictators, which means the donor countries themselves are fueling corruption. Apart from that, Douglas, do we really need the aid? Do countries really need the aid? Africa, we have got enough resources. Look at a country like Angola. Why should it get aid? It gets aid because it has got a dictator. A dictator who has held his own family and then handed all the finances of the country to the family to loot the way they want instead of developing the economy. Now they have just changed leadership. It is the new leadership is trying to catch up, but after the damage, a very big damage has been done. Look at Guinea. The man is having his son as the vice president and all other sons in government. So what kind of government do these donor countries give money to? Is that money meant for the people or it is meant for the individuals in government? It is meant for the individuals in government, and the donor countries know it, and therefore they are doing it deliberately, and they are the ones who are fueling corruption on this continent. Otherwise, if they were serious, they would cut off that aid even tomorrow.
David, do you agree, especially the attraction of donor countries to dictators on the continent, and whether Africa needs foreign aid at all?
No, I agree 100% with what my colleague said there. From West East, Nigeria, the largest oil producer in Africa, the 13th largest oil producer in Africa, the 27th largest economy in the world, really.
Mm-hmm.
Then you go Angola, move westwards, Angola, move Congo, all the way to our area, Uganda. These countries are not poor. They just have poor leadership that keeps driving them into the ground and then turning them into begging bowls. That is embarrassing. But I agree with my colleague that these countries normally should not be needing aid. It's failing to develop and then falling on easy money. As simple as that.
Yes, but you see, the interesting part is, regardless of whatever you do, that foreign aid money, you still get more. For instance, they mentioned the example of Rwanda. Rwanda will still get more money from Britain as foreign aid. Uganda, one time they got aid money for, I think it was for malaria, tuberculosis, and HIV AIDS. It was all stolen. A few weeks later, they got much more, so they can steal more again. So, Suleiman, it defeats logic.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't at all. That is why the ordinary man on the continent is in trouble. Because, they even change plans. Sometimes they send it as the aid for military assistance, humanitarian aid in form of constitutional development, to help electrical, to foster democracy. Therefore, you get money to help into the electoral processes, to help the judiciary, to help train the police. But look at countries like Russia. They cannot even allow one person to stand as an opposition leader, a young girl, actually two ladies in prison, just women in prison, because they try to compete with the president. But you find money coming to Rwanda in the form of helping to foster democracy, to help democracy grow. And you wonder which democracy is going to grow. 10 years, they are still giving money for democracy to grow. The same in Uganda. You find the judiciary being attacked by the ordinary policemen, but they will say they are giving them aid to help policemen, to help democracy. So all this money, as they send it, it is eaten in form of workshop, in form of training camps, in form of whatever. It is just corruption straight. They don't even say anything. They just go and sign that money and take away. And the donor countries continue giving this money, which means there is a syndicate between the dictators and the donor countries. What is lacking is that the ordinary taxpayers in these donor countries have failed to wake up to the realization that their money is being donated freely to the dictators. Until maybe it is the Kagame case which will help us now, that the citizens in UK will realize that you give a poor country like Rwanda, and that money is not meant for the poor people, but for the leader to enjoy himself. He ends up donating it to charity, to whoever he wants, like the way he gave it to Arsenal.
David, finally, we're running out of time, but gone are the days when things like human rights, respect for human rights, freedom of expression and speech, good governance, were issues which would help people get even more assistance. Those are thrown out the window these days.
No. Again, Suleimani just put it perfectly. So here is a government that just thrown people who dare to basically stand for office, which is a minimal basic right in the Constitution. So Kagame throw these people in jail, and of course, do you think that the British will say let's stop aid? No,
of course not.
They'll probably increase.
So we are out of time, Suleiman. So what's the way? I mean, you blame the citizens of the donors. How about the local citizens of the recipients? 30 seconds. Why don't they demand accountability? 30 seconds, Suleiman.
Douglas, so long as we have got dictators at play, there is no hope. Because the bottom line is, the total amount of aid got by Africa is between 30 to 50 billion annually. The money spent by corruption on the continent is around 150 billion. That is produced by the AU. That is the figure. Which means corruption takes three times what we are given. Which means unless we put our houses in order, then even the aid will not help us. That one is just a donation. So if the international community, if the donor countries don't stop to give that aid until when we correct these anomalies of dictators who are not accountable, who are just oppressing their people, then they are just wasting money, they are just donating it. Because without accountability, where do you put the money to? Without an efficient civil service, where do you put the money?
Unfortunately,
that aid tomorrow.
Yes, unfortunately, we're out of time, gentlemen. That wraps up this edition of Reporters Roundtable. Thanks to my panelists, David Himbara, an educator, political economist, and author, and also to Suleiman Mugula, an independent political analyst based in Durban, South Africa. Gentlemen, thanks very much for being on the show. Thank you. For those who missed any part of this program, you can see it on the website. Just go to our website and to all be there. Thanks very much for tuning in tonight. I'm your host, Douglas Simpoga in Washington, wishing you all the best.
This is VOA News,